looking down, his eyes on her. But we did. I stiffened.
Want to take care of that?
Rain murmured in my ear.
I get the impression you've been anxious to kill something lately.
I rubbed my fingertips together. He thought right, as much as I hated to admit it. I craved death like an opiate addict craved their fix. And yet, a part of me was afraid. Afraid to pierce another chest when the last one I had pierced was Rain's. Afraid to hear my father's voice in my ear. Afraid of whatever I might not feel anymore. The vampire crept closer.
If you don't move, Rain said, then I will.
But the words weren't even out of his mouth before my decision was made. I slipped through the ruins to circle around behind my target. I was out of practice. The terrain was unfamiliar. I wasn't as silent as I usually was in my nighttime hunts in Sivernage. The vampire had turned to meet me by the time I reached him. That was fine. I wanted more of a fight. He came at me with his claws, but my blade was faster. I nearly took his arm off when he swung at me. Blood dotted my face, iron sweet when my tongue ran over it. My target hissed and dove for me. I sidestepped, let him run himself into the wall. He wasn't used to fighting. Not really. Even compared to the laziest of Sivernage's hunters, he was sluggish and unfocused. Starving. Untrained. Practically an animal.
Wings first,
Vincent reminded me, and I tore two slashes through each one. Hiage wings. So satisfyingly easy to pierce. His claws opened a cut over my cheek. I didn't even flinch. A strike to his leg to make him stumble, his right shoulder to take out his dominant arm, and then, finally, I had him pinned. He didn't know my name or my title. He only smelled my human blood. The blood that made me unworthy of being anything other than food in his mind. And now there was fear in his eyes. For a brief moment, there it was. Power. Control.
Push hard to make it through the breastbone, Vincent whispered.
But I didn't need my father's advice anymore. My strike was quick and true, piercing cartilage, sliding right into his heart. Too late, the memory hit me, of the way that this same blade had felt sliding into Rain's chest. That rust-red stare, urging me on.
End it, princess.
I snapped my eyes open, forced myself to replace Rain's face with this one. This person who deserved it. Uncomplicated. Easy. I yanked my blade free. The vampire started to slide down the rock. But I couldn't stop myself before I stabbed again. 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 And finally, when the vampire's chest was little more than pulp, I let the body slump to the ground. I stared down at him, my shoulders heaving. His chest was a mess of broken flesh. For some reason, I thought of Evelina's scar and how she might have looked dying on her bedroom floor, blood all over her chest, too.
She got away.
Rain's voice startled me. He'd flown up and perched atop the ruins. He nodded toward the lake. The human woman now wandered back down the path, bucket balanced against her hip, seemingly oblivious to how close she had just come to death. I glanced down at the dead body. Another starving beast raised to see humans as nothing more than something to use. Another animal who was only a tool to those above him. On and on and on. The futility of it was, all at once, dizzying.
I feel like you usually take much more joy in this,
Rain said. Just needed to be done, I said, sheathing my weapon. So we did it.
You did it. I watched.
I glanced at him and he smiled.
Enjoyed the view.
I turned away and didn't say anything. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw his face fall. I started to walk back to the path we'd taken, but he lingered behind. He tilted his head back, squinting into the distance. Then he pointed.
Let's go up there.
I followed his gaze to the spires of ruined towers that loomed over us. Why? I asked.
Because look at it. Must be a hell of a view.
I squinted up at it,
He was, I had to admit, probably right. He didn't give me a chance to argue with him anyway before he extended his hand again. I really did think about arguing, but curiosity got the better of me. So I took his hand and let him pick me up again. Immediately, I regretted that decision. This flying with him never stopped being awkward. I had to work very hard at not noticing the way his arms folded around me, how close they pulled me, how a tiny primal part of me enjoyed the warmth of his skin, and I had to work especially hard at ignoring the reassuring sweep of his thumb over my lower back, and the way it made it so hard not to think of this version of Rain as the man I had allowed into my bed, and my body, and even, perhaps, my heart. Our eyes found each other's briefly, the moonlight cold over the warmth in his rust-red irises, before I looked away. With several powerful pumps of his wings, we launched into the air. My uncomfortable feelings about our closeness dissolved when I looked up to see the stars growing closer above us, as if wrapping us in an embrace. It was like a drug, that feeling. Made it so easy to let go of all the complicated things I'd left on the ground. Rain picked up speed as we rose, and we approached the top of the tower with such incredible swiftness that I had no idea how he was going to make that landing. A second later, I realized he wasn't. He flew straight past the tower, higher than its tallest rocky peak, higher than the next and the next. Moisture clung to my cheeks, the air damp and cold. The moon, a cloud-coated, pregnant gibbous, felt so close I could caress it. Look down. Rain's breath was warm on my ear. I did. The sea spread out before us, an endless expanse of rippling glass. Behind, the landscape of Lahore, tragic and beautiful in its disrepair. The ugly reality we had been walking through, invisible from up here. Even Evelina's castle was so small from this distance, just a little child's collection of bricks. Beyond Lahore, the deserts of the House of Night rolled endlessly on, smattering of lights glowing in the far distance, consumed by the foggy mist. My eyes stung. Maybe with wind, maybe not. Peaceful. I didn't mean to speak aloud. Rain murmured, "It is." He hovered here, holding me tight. It was cold this high up, but I didn't feel it. Perhaps I should have been afraid that nothing but his grip was keeping me from death. I wasn't. "Sometimes," he said, "when I'm down there, it seems like nothing about this place can ever be peaceful. But then there's this." I swallowed, nodded, because I couldn't even deny that I knew exactly what he meant. Finally, he dipped. We soared back down, returning to the earth, and gracefully landed at the top of the stone tower. Half the wall had collapsed, leaving the uppermost room to be little more than a circular stone ledge against a crumbling semicircle of brick. The place must have been even older than it looked from the ground. Even the suggestion of windows had been worn away by the elements over the years. Rain put me down, then turned to take in the view. A vast panorama of the land and the sea, Lahore on one side, the ocean on the other. "Not as good as up there," he said, "but still good."
"Definitely not as good as up there," I said.
He glanced over his shoulder at me. From this angle, the moonlight silhouetted him, painting a silver line along his face, catching a peculiar look in his eye. "What?" I said.
"Nothing."
He didn't stop staring at me. It didn't feel like nothing. Then he said,
"It's just that I should have guessed that you were half vampire, right from the first time we flew together."
"Why?"
"Because you've never looked so happy as you do when you're up there. Should have been obvious that you were made for it."
Something about the way he just said that made my brow furrow. I shot him a quizzical look. "Well," I said, "I'm not made for it."
"I disagree, princess."
I scoffed and motioned to my back for emphasis, distinctly wingless.
I don't know. I think I lack some important parts. But Rain seemed unmoved.
Wings are conjured, he said simply. You're half nightborn. You probably have the ability to use them.
I blinked. It took a moment for his words to sink in. That's ridiculous. But the first time Rain took me flying, I did feel like I had found a missing piece of myself in the sky. Like it was as natural to be there as it was to breathe air. He's wrong, I told myself, clamping down on the hint of hope. He stepped closer.
You haven't even stopped to think about all the things you might be capable of, Aurea.
I scoffed. This is ridiculous. Another step. His eyes sparkled with amusement. I now had to tip my chin back to meet his stare. His lips curled as he leaned closer. His breath warmed my mouth.
You want to find out.
Time slowed, stilled. My heartbeat was fast. I should have moved away. I should have pushed him back. I didn't. The tip of his nose brushed mine. For a moment, the overwhelming, traitorous urge to close that small distance between us seized me. A primal, nonsensical desire, low in my stomach, desperate. His gaze flicked down to my mouth, back to my eyes.
Do you remember?
He whispered.
That time you threw me out of the window.
My brow furrowed.
What?
He gave me a firm, forceful push, and then I was falling. Chapter 23. Aurea.
I was going to die.
I was going to die. I was going to die. I was going to die. That one reality, a certainty, cycled through my mind with every heartbeat as the world rushed around me, nothing but smears of color and darkness and nothingness. My limbs flailed vainly. 1 second, two, free fall. Might as well have been a lifetime. Rain's voice rose over the rushing air.
You can do this, Aurea.
He sounded so certain. I wanted to laugh at him. He shouted,
look at the sky.
I forced my eyes open, forced them up to the starry velvet above. It was jarringly still. So close, I felt like I could reach out and touch it. I realized that the air, even while plummeting, did have a rhythm to it, like a pulse I could align with my own. I stretched out my limbs, drew in a breath, let the violent rush of the sky fill my lungs, even though the force of it burned my chest. I let myself become a part of it. And then, time seemed to stretch and slow. The direction of the air shifted. My stomach dropped, leveled out. Behind me, Rain let out a wordless whoop, a sound I barely heard over the rush of wind in my ears and my own thrumming heartbeat, a heartbeat that grew faster and stronger as I tilted my head toward the stars, and then looked down. The world was no longer rushing closer. Instead, it all spread out beneath me. Ruins and sand, nothing but abstract shapes in the moonlight. Mother, I whispered. My voice was shaking. Maybe I was already dead and I was hallucinating. I didn't want to move in case it all shattered. Rain swooped down beside me and I chanced a glance at him. He was grinning with pure childlike joy. That smile, it made my stomach clench.
Fucking amazing, right?
He said. And it was his reaction that made it actually sink in. I couldn't do anything but grin and nod. Yes, yes, it was fucking amazing. I was fucking flying. The reality of this hit me all at once, immovable and confusing, and suddenly I was thinking too hard about the wings that I swore I must have been hallucinating, and the air beneath them, and these new unfamiliar muscles that I had no idea how to control. Rain's eyes went wide. He lurched toward me, hand outstretched.
Aurea, watch.
Everything went black. Vincent smelled like incense, a scent that was clean and old at once, elegant as preserved rose petals. It reminded me of very expensive things one shouldn't touch, but it also reminded me of safety. My father, in his strange way, was both of those things, distant and comfortable. Vincent rarely touched me, but now he grabbed my shoulders and hoisted me up, holding me firmly as I shook away the fuzziness from my senses.
What in the name of the mother were you thinking?
My head hurt. I rubbed my eyes and opened them again to see Vincent's staring directly into mine, silver ice cold. He shook me once firmly.
Never do that. Never. How many times have I told you that?
He was always calm and reserved, but I knew how to read my father. These rare moments when his fear for me slipped through his constant stoicism shook me down to my bones. I was only 11 years old. Vincent was the beginning and end of what I knew. When he was afraid, I was terrified. I looked up at the balcony above. I was just trying to climb.
Never do that.
He grabbed my wrist and lifted it as if for emphasis. His fingers were long, wrapping easily around my arm.
Do you know how breakable your bones are? How quickly your skin tears? It would be so easy for this world to take you away forever. Don't give it reason to.
My jaw was tight, my eyes burning. The truth of my father's words sat heavy in my stomach, leaden with my embarrassment. Of course he was right. I had seen Vincent leap from that very balcony and fly off into the night. I'd seen him fall farther and land on his feet without a scratch. But Vincent was a vampire, and I was human. He was strong, and I was weak. I understand, I said. I'd always been bad at hiding my emotions. Vincent's face softened. He dropped my arm and touched my face.
You are too precious to be taken away by such a mundane danger, my little serpent,
he said gently.
I wish it were different.
I nodded. Even young, I knew a wounded pride was better than a wounded body. Better to be ashamed and alive than overconfident and dead.
Now get ready for bed, he said,
releasing me and rising, turning to his armchair just within the double doors.
You're on chapter 52 of the histories, if I remember correctly. We'll do two more tonight before you sleep.
Yes, Vincent, I said, grateful that he was giving me an opportunity to impress him in my studies after my embarrassing little misstep. I rose and took a few steps into the library. Then, something prickled at the back of my neck, a strange awareness of realities that didn't line up. The realization that this library wasn't on this floor, that I read the histories when I was 14, not 10, that Vincent was... My chest constricted, breath withered in my lungs.
We don't have to look at it, little serpent,
Vincent's voice said behind me. So gentle, so sad. But the truth was the truth. I did have to look at it. I turned around slowly. Vincent was in his armchair, a book on his lap, the firelight playing over the familiar planes of his face, a mournful smile at his lips. I knew that face so well. Now I grabbed onto the sight of every angle of it desperately, as if to keep it from slipping away. You're dead, I said. My voice now belonged to my adult self. Not the version of myself from 13 years in the past.
Yes, he said. I'm afraid so.
My shoulders rose and fell faster. Emotion burned in my chest, swallowing everything in its path. My grief for him, my love for him, my hatred of him, my anger, my confusion. All of it wrenched through me at once. Too many wildly conflicting thoughts, too many words that I couldn't form on a tongue that was glued to the roof of my mouth, trapped against a jaw clenched so hard it shook. He rose, his eyes never leaving mine.
It's all right, little serpent,
he whispered.
Ask me. Ask me what you want to know.
I opened my mouth.
Wake up, Aurea. Wake up.
Fear. There was fear in that voice. I recognized the fear before I recognized the words. The intense kind of fear. The kind that was the flip side of deep affection. My head pounded. My entire body hurt. I opened my eyes. Rain leaned over me, framed against the starry sky. He let out a visible exhale of relief. Awful lot of concern for someone who threw me off the top of a building, I said. His exhale became a chuckle. I wouldn't let you fall. He gave me a lopsided smile. But I knew you wouldn't let you fall either. How long have I...
Just for a couple of minutes. You took a nasty hit, though.
I felt like it. I was dizzy enough that I actually took Rain's hand when he offered it to me and pulled myself upright. I felt strange. Like my entire body was off balance. I glimpsed something out of the corner of my eye and turned, and he let out a grunt as he jerked to the side, dodging.
Careful with those things.
I craned my neck to look behind me. At them. My wings. I could only glimpse them, and though I felt their presence on my back, I struggled to isolate the muscles to move them around. But even at a glimpse, I stared at them in shock, in silence. They were Vincent's wings. Featherless, of course, as all Hiage wings were. The skin was darker than night. So black, light curled up and died within them. The talons were silvery white, like drops of moonlight. And I had the accents of red. Marks of the Hiage air. Bright, bloody red, running down the wings in delicate streaks, collecting at the edges and along their outline. I tried to move them, and did so, jerkily, in a way that I'm sure looked ridiculous. Wings. My wings. I turned in a circle as I tried to get a better look at them, watching the way the moonlight fell over them with narrowed eyes, like any angle might reveal a flaw that would betray my hallucination. Nope. They were real. I was making myself dizzy.
Take it easy,
Rain said quietly.
It'll take a minute to adjust to them.
He spoke so gently, with so much knowing calm. He, too, I realized, would have been an adult the first time he conjured his own wings. My wings. My wings. It seemed like a ridiculous joke, like a fucking miracle. How many times had I dreamed of having them? How many times had I looked at the sky and wished I could reach out to those stars like the vampires did? My cheeks hurt because I was smiling so hard. I laughed a little, a sound I didn't mean to make. And then, suddenly, my chest tightened, bracing against a wave of something much more complicated, something that swallowed my joy in a single gulp. I drew in another breath, and instead of a laugh, this time a strangled sob came out, bubbling up before I could stop it. When I inhaled, it scraped through me like a serrated knife, ugly and gasping, red hot with the overwhelming, searing intensity of my anger. I was on the ground again. I barely heard Rain gasp my name, barely felt his hands on my shoulders where he was immediately at my side, crouching next to me.
What's wrong, Aurea? What's wrong?
He spoke with such raw, vulnerable concern. Voice low, comforting. That concern twisted a knife in my stomach. I swallowed my next sob and only half succeeded. How did you know? I wouldn't lift my head, wouldn't look at Rain or allow him to look at me. The words were so disfigured I didn't know how he even understood them.
What?
He asked softly. How did you know I could do that?
I just knew. You're half vampire and a powerful one. You're made for flying. And I've seen over and over again what you're capable of. It was just
obvious. He didn't need to finish. I understood him. Rain, someone who had known me for less than a year, had seen that potential in me. And it was him, my enemy, someone who had every reason to cage me, who opened the door for me to seize that power. The truth I didn't want to look at now stared me in the face. Impossible to ignore, no matter how tightly I squeezed my eyes shut. In the darkness, I saw Vincent the night of the Half Moon Ball when we had danced together. He'd been so uncharacteristically sentimental that night, so affectionate. I'd asked him why he never took me flying. And I remembered now, as clearly as if he was standing in front of me all over again, what he had said.
The last thing I wanted was for you to think you could and start throwing yourself off of balconies.
I choked out. He knew. He knew. He always knew. It wasn't about protecting me. He didn't want me to jump because he didn't want me to find out I could catch myself. That night, he had been so sentimental because he knew he was about to order the slaughter of Salome. He knew he was about to kill any hope I had of finding any family I had left. He knew. And he knew he was about to lie to me, and he knew he was going to lose me for it. He knew all of it. He knew. The words ripped from my throat, shaking with tears and jagged sobs. He knew, and he never told me, he never. Why? Rain murmured,
"No one can answer that question."
In a fit of rage, my head snapped up, my anger strong enough to drown out my self-consciousness. I probably looked like a wild animal, face ruddy and tear-streaked, mouth twisted into a snarl. "Don't fucking pity me," I hissed. "Give me one honest thing, Rain Ashraj. I want to hear someone say it." I was tired of performances and lies, tired of dancing around the fucking truth. I craved honesty, the way a flower craved sunlight. I even craved the pain of it driven deep into my heart. Rain's face shifted. For all his faults, he didn't pity me. He didn't hide the truth.
"I think Vincent was very afraid of you, Aurea."
"Afraid?" I let out a choked laugh. He was the Nightborn King, and I'm just..."
"You aren't just anything. You were his heir. You were the most dangerous person in the world to him. And I think he was terrified of you because of it."
It sounded unbelievable. Absurd. "Look at this." I leapt to my feet, thrusting my hand out to the view of Lahore below us. This dead, pathetic, broken city. A mere ghost of what it once was. Just like me. Rain had taken half a step back, and I realized dimly that nightfire now engulfed my hands, blazing up my arms. I noticed this very distantly, as if I was standing far outside my body. "Look at what he did to this place," I ground out. "He killed dozens of people the day he left. He killed children he partially raised. Children that didn't even truly pose a threat to him. Just because he was that fucking thorough."
"It is important to be thorough and cautious, little serpent."
How many times had he said that to me? I was talking so fast I could barely breathe. My words rough-hewn by anger. So why would he let me live if I was so dangerous? Why didn't he kill me the day he found me? Instead of taking me home and lying to me for almost 20 years? Why wouldn't he just kill me instead of caging me, instead of breaking me? Suddenly, Rain was right in front of me. So close, the night fire surely had to burn. If it hurt, he didn't show it. His hands gripped my shoulders tight.
"You are not broken."
I'd never heard him sound so furious, though his voice didn't rise at all.
"You are not broken, Aurea. Do you understand me?"
"No, I didn't, because I was broken, just like Lahore was broken. I was just as broken as this city and its ruins and ghosts. just as broken as Evelina and her 200-year-old scar and her twisted obsession with the man who gave it to her. What fucking right did I have to judge her for that when I was no different? Vincent had ruined me. He had saved me. He had loved me. He had stifled me. He had manipulated me. He had made me everything that I was, everything that I could be. Even the greatest parts of my power, the parts he never wanted me to find, were his. And now, here I was, pouring over every wound he gave me. And no matter how much they hurt, I never wanted them to heal. Because they were his. And I missed him too much to hate him the way I wanted to, and I hated him most of all for that. All at once, exhaustion fell over me. My flames shriveled away. Rain still held my shoulders. He was so close that our faces were only inches apart. It would be so easy to lean forward and fall against his chest. If this was the version of him I had known in the Qajari, maybe I would have done that. Let him support me for a little while. But it wasn't. Look at me, Aurea. I didn't want to. I shouldn't. I'd see too much. He'd see too much. I should pull away from him. Instead, I lifted my head, and Rain's stare, red as dried blood, nailed me to the wall. I spent 70 years trapped by the worst of vampire power, he said. And I spent so much of that time trying to make them make sense. But they don't. Rishon, Hiaj, Nightborn, Shadowborn, Bloodborn. Hell, fucking gods, it doesn't matter. Neculi Vasaris was... His throat bobbed. Evil doesn't even cover it. And for a long time, I thought he didn't love anything. I was wrong. He did love his wife. He loved her. And he hated that he loved her. He loved her so much, he choked the life out of her. Rain's eyes had drifted far away. Drifted somewhere in the past that I knew, just from the look on his face, hurt him to stare at directly. There's nothing they're more afraid of than love, he murmured. They've been taught their entire lives that every true connection is nothing but a danger to them. That's ridiculous. Why? Because I was still stuck on this idea that Vincent had been afraid of me, this idea that went against everything I had ever known. His mouth twisted into a wry smirk. Love is fucking terrifying, he murmured. I think that's true, no matter who you are. I stilled. There was something about the way he said that. The closeness of him, the steadiness of his stare, that jolted me back to my senses. What was I doing? Why was I showing him this? Rain was my kidnapper. He had lied to me. He had used me. Rain had murdered my father. And now he was lecturing me about the sanctity of love? He was right. Love was terrifying, to be so vulnerable to another person, and I stopped that thought. No, whatever I had felt for Rain was not love. But it had been vulnerable. More vulnerable than I ever should have let myself become. And look at how I'd paid for it. Look at how my father had paid for it. My anger, my grief drained away. In its place was the thick burn of shame. I yanked away from Rain's touch and tried not to notice the flicker of disappointment on his face. I'd like to be alone, I said. My voice was harsh, a finality. Silence. Then he said, It's dangerous out here. I can handle it. He paused, unconvinced, I knew. I wouldn't look at him, but I knew if I did, he'd have that look on his face, that fucking look, like he wanted to say something that would be too earnest, too real. Just go, I said. It sounded more like a plea than I wanted it to. But maybe that was what made him listen. All right, he said softly, and the sound of his wings faded off into the night. Chapter 24. Araya. I sat on top of those towering ruins for a long time, trying and failing to feel nothing. The sky slowly warmed, cold moonlight replaced by the gold touch of dawn, revealing all the ugliest truths of this city. He had been so eager to forget this place, but this place never forgot him, never recovered from the nonchalant cruelty of his departure. I hated how familiar that felt. All of it was like the room that Evelina now kept as a twisted shrine to him. Nothing but discarded trash, and she projected such meaning onto it. A shoe, a hairbrush, a stupid scribble of ink. I blinked. A scribble of ink. Recognition nagged at the back of my mind, somewhere I had seen this view before. I stood, then took several steps back, watching the way the landscape shifted with my perspective. The sea a bit to the right, the tower slightly overlapping it. No, not quite, but close. I closed my eyes and pictured it. The ink drawing on Vincent's desk, perfectly preserved for centuries. Then I opened my eyes and peered around the edge. Another tower stood just slightly to the south of this one. It somehow managed to look even older. But by my estimation, the viewpoint would line up. If I was right, the sketch of Lahore that Vincent had made might have been drawn from those ruins. I hesitated, taking a moment to flex my back muscles. They were fiercely sore, and every movement felt clumsy with the wings attached to them. I didn't regret sending Rain away exactly. No, I told myself, I definitely didn't regret it. But it might have been wise to get some more wing instruction before I had. I wasn't going to let you fall. But more importantly, I knew you weren't going to let you fall. The words floated through my mind unprompted. Mother, I hoped he was right. I kept my eye on my target, and I jumped. Whatever I did to get from one tower to the other was probably better described as controlled falling than flying. But I made it. Barely. I let out an ugly oof as my side jammed against a pile of ancient brick. Pain tore through my left wing as it scraped a stray shard of rock. It was amazing how disorienting it was for the boundaries of your own body to suddenly be twice as wide in both directions. The impact threw me, sending me rolling across the brick floor with a collection of ragged grunts. I pushed myself to my hands and knees, collecting myself. I was more shaken than I'd like to admit. Wings were sensitive, apparently, because the cut hurt fiercely. I craned my neck to try to see the injury with little success. I lifted my head, and suddenly, my wound didn't matter anymore. Fuck, I whispered. Wings spread out over the wall before me. Hiaj wings, slate gray with tinges of purple. They were life-size, or maybe bigger, pressed against the crumbling remains of the stone wall. Growths that at first looked like bulging veins spread along their length, clinging to the formation of the bones and reaching across the expanses of skin, tinted red, forming a knot at the center that pulsed bright crimson. A heart. It looked almost exactly like a heart. But as I pushed myself up and dragged myself closer, I realized the growths weren't veins at all. They were some kind of fungus, maybe. The one that looked sickeningly lifelike. The heart at the center of the wings, though, that looked so real. Was it flesh? Petrified like the wings? Or something else? I didn't remember getting to my feet, nor crossing the room. But the next thing I knew, I was standing right before it. The veins and the heart pulsed in small rhythmic movements, slowly quickening. I realized after a moment that they mirrored my breathing. The hair stood upright on the back of my neck. I'd never been so repelled by something and simultaneously so drawn to it. It was disgusting. It was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. One part of me thought, I need to get far, far away from whatever this is. The other part thought, Septimus was right. I do just know. Simple, uncomplicated fact. This was what we had been looking for. It was beyond questioning, and I'd just found it alone. My hand was outstretched before I even told my body to move. My fingertips brushed the heart-like growth. It was so cold I almost jolted away. But before I could react, several veins slid along the surface of it, reached for me, and I let out a hiss of pain. Drops of my blood, bright human red, smeared against the fungus as the vein-like cords slithered back around the heart. It momentarily seemed as if the wings were flexing, stretching, an illusion of shifting muscles. Then the fibers pulled away, retreating along the walls of the ruins, and the thing that had so resembled a heart opened. Warmth suffused the air. The red glow drenched the shadows. I stared into it, blinking, forcing my eyes to adjust. The heart had shifted, now mimicking open, cupped hands. At its center was a crescent moon of polished, gleaming silver, painfully white against the fading red surrounding it. It was perhaps the size of my palm. The two tips, sharp as blades. So sharp that at first I thought that maybe it was intended to be a weapon, until I noticed the delicate silver chain attached to one end. A pendant. Once the light faded, it was unremarkable, if very pretty. I reached for it.
My father's blood is hot and slick on my hands. The wings are still warm. I need to keep wiping the blood on my shirt. I look like what I am, a monster, just like the ones that crawl through the ruins of Lahore every night. I do not have regrets. This is not what the historians will write one day about me. No one will remember the names or faces of the children that I killed tonight. A nightborn tradition of power, killing children. My father killed my younger brother minutes after he drew his first breath. I was 16 years old when I watched him throw that little bloody wad of fabric over the railing, feeding it to the demons circling below. He always made it clear that I was to function as his heir, but never as a threat. I hid so carefully all these years, trampled down every scrap of my power, endured every abuse. I did it all with a placid stare on my face, never letting him see the hatred beneath. It was not useful to hate my father. It was useful to learn from him. So I learned. It was so satisfying to see it on his face when he realized his mistake, that he had underestimated me my entire life. Whenever I think of the faces of the children, my nieces and nephews and cousins, I replace them with that of my father. The realization of his hubris, his miscalculation. It made every year in this shithole worth it. I think only of my father as I nail his wings to the wall, muttering spells beneath my breath. I think only of my father. I think of the Kajari. I think of a crown on my head. I do not have regrets. I do not have regrets.
I couldn't breathe. My stomach churned. I couldn't see anything, couldn't feel. My hand hurt. Mother, my hand hurt so fucking much. It was that pain that rooted me back to the world, and I clung to it. I forced my eyes open. My vision was blurry, as if I'd just been staring directly into the sun, though this tower was still dim with only the warm beginnings of sunrise slipping through the shattered stone. I looked down. My hand was covered in blood. I flipped it over to see that I'd been clutching the pendant so tightly that the sharp edges had carved a perfect imprint of the crescent moon into my palm. What the hell had just
Do you know?
A light, childlike voice came from behind me.
How long I have been trying to access that?
A chill fell over me. I forced myself to my feet and was rewarded with a wave of dizziness so strong I staggered against the wall. I righted myself and turned to see Evelina standing silhouetted against the sunlight, one of her child companions, a stoic-faced little boy, beside her. Fuck. It was past dawn. How could they be here? The beginnings of sunburns, a dark purplish cast, had started on Evelina's cheeks, though she wore a heavy cloak with the hood pulled low over her face. Her wings were creamy, fleshy pink, and the burns on them were worse, especially since the cloak couldn't have covered them as she was flying. If they bothered her, though, she didn't show it. She didn't blink. Her blue eyes were wide and eerily bright in the dim light, smile tight and unwavering. She was looking at me like I was something to be devoured, like she wanted to peel my face off and wear it over her own.
I discovered it about a decade ago, you see,
she chirped.
It wasn't there 200 years ago. I knew it was his right away. He must have come without telling me. Must have.
She blinked, like she lost her train of thought mid-sentence.
But I could never open it.
I said nothing. Drip, as my blood hit the stone floor. The child's eyes locked to it. His throat bobbed. Evelina's nostrils flared. I slid the pendant into my pocket and reached for my blade. I tried not to show it, but I was still leaning against the wall. My head ached with the exertion of forcing my eyes to focus. Fragments of whatever I had experienced when I touched the pendant slipped into the corners of my vision without my permission. A gritty, grainy version of the world.
And the wings,
she added, still not blinking.
How interesting.
Drip. The blood hit the ground again. The child lunged for me. He was fast. I barely had time to respond before he was on me, teeth sinking into my arm. I let out a curse and flung myself against the wall, sending him careening to the stone.
Move, little serpent,
Vincent whispered to me hurriedly.
Move. She's coming for you.
I knew she was. She was coming, and I couldn't move quickly enough. I heard her before I saw her. I whirled around as fast as I could, nearly sending myself back into the stone, lashing out at her with my blades. I caught flesh, her arm. She drew back, face contorted into a hiss. She wielded a rapier, similar in style to the one Vincent had once wielded. Not a coincidence, I was sure. I barely managed to deflect her when she lunged again. My body felt as if it was a half step disconnected from my mind. My wings, which I had no idea how to disappear, drastically altered my balance. Evelina was no great warrior, certainly not compared to those I fought in the Qajari, but she was still strong and fast, her movements eerily similar to Vincent's in style. Efficient, precise, graceful, but half a step from bloodlust, sloppier with every drop of my blood. She was taller than me, but at least I was used to that. I blocked her from above with one blade and used the opening to drive my second into her side. She snarled and retaliated with a blow so devastatingly strong my back slammed against the wall. Pain. A moment of blurred vision. When I focused again, Evelina's face was right in front of mine, our noses brushing. My arm trembled violently as I blocked her sword between us. I'd been in exactly this position countless times before. I could use her momentum, force her against the wall, blade through the heart. Always so satisfying, because this was always where they thought they had me. But it took a massive burst of strength to do that. I didn't know if I had it. If I tried and failed, I'd expose myself to her. I didn't have a choice. I took the shot. With a ragged scream, I pushed back against her with everything I had, reversing our positions against the wall. She hadn't been expecting it. Her shock worked to my advantage. Good. I was glad someone still underestimated me. I did not hesitate. I drew back my blade, ready to plunge it into her chest. Agonizing pain ripped through me. I couldn't even place it at first, only that I knew it was some of the worst I'd ever felt, like fire and steel at once. I staggered backward, whirling to fling away my attacker. The child went rolling across the ground. I tried to turn and tripped. My body wasn't cooperating with me. I glanced down and realized that he had stabbed my already wounded wing. It now dragged on the ground, hindering my movements. Fuck. Evelina. She was already lunging for me. I raised my weapon to meet her. Too late. She was on top of me before I could react. Slender clawed fingers grabbed my face, nails digging into my cheeks.
Such a rude guest, she murmured.
She smiled at me and then slammed my head against the ground.
Chapter 25. Rain. Araya hadn't come back to our rooms. I watched her up there for almost an hour, just sitting in that tower staring at the horizon. I'd given her space when she wanted it. I owed her that, didn't I? But that didn't mean that I was about to leave her unguarded. I remained until my exposed skin stung and my eyes began to ache, but eventually I had no choice but to get back to the room. When I left, Araya had still been at the top of that tower. I peered between the curtains for the 15th time this morning, wincing as the sun hit still tender burns. Even in stolen 3-second glances, Lahore managed to look even more pathetic in the daylight, downright grotesque. At least at night, there was a kind of ancient romanticism to it, the moonlight suggesting outlines of what it might have looked like long ago. But there was nothing sentimental about Lahore in daylight, just corpses and debris, starving humans creeping around in the ruins trying to rob starving vampires, starving demons attempting to use the sunlight to hunt their prey, flinging their fellow beasts out into the deadly light, letting it cook them alive. And Araya was still out there.
What are you doing?
Missa's voice was sleep-slurred. I glanced over my shoulder and closed the curtains to see her rubbing her eyes, blinking blearily at me. Her hair had only gotten wilder as it had grown longer. One side was now comically smooshed up against the side of her head. Oh, you know, I said, keeping my voice casual in my deliberate non-answer.
Past sunrise.
Missa glanced around, blinking sleep away. Realization dawned on her.
Where's Araya?
I didn't answer. Peered through the curtains again, winced and flicked them closed. That was all the answer Missa needed. All at once, she was awake.
She's gone?
We had gone out sightseeing.
We?
I shot Missa a glare. What's that supposed to mean?
I'm just surprised she wanted to go anywhere with you.
I cornered her. I abandoned that train of thought. It doesn't matter, I muttered. I was with her for a while, but then she wanted to be alone, so I gave her what she wanted.
But she still hasn't come back, Missa said hesitantly.
A few seconds of silence. The possibility hung in the air, obvious, even if neither of us would state it right away. Missa whispered.
You don't think she...
Ran? Betrayed you? Araya would have had the perfect opening for it, an unfamiliar city, the cover of daylight, no guards here that would stop her brand new wings to carry her away. I swallowed, rubbing the center of my chest. Tonight I had seen her smile, really smile, for the first time in more than a month, and goddess, it did something to me. It was like witnessing a rare natural phenomenon. And when I'd watched her fly tonight, alight with such joy, only one thought had rang out in my mind. I never knew something could look so beautiful flying away. I peered through the curtains and imagined Araya fading off into the distance of that sun-bleached blue sky never to be seen again. Imagined her finding some new, wonderful life somewhere so far from here.
You think she left?
Missa asked finally,
like it took her all this time just to put words to it. I thought of Araya curled up with her knees to her chest in those ruins, those sobs coming out of her like deep water drawing from a rift in the earth. My fingers tightened around the curtains at the thought of it. Did Araya run? I fucking wished she had. But the pit of tension in my stomach said something isn't right. No, I said. No, I don't think so. I closed the curtains and turned back to Misha. Let's go.
Chapter 26. Araya. I forced my eyes open. Pain shocked my body, but I couldn't place where it was coming from, only that it was overwhelming. It was dark. I struggled to make out forms in the shadows. The only light emanated from two nightfire lanterns above an unlit hearth. It smelled like mold and dust and civilizations long dead. No windows, only stone. A few half-decayed pieces of broken furniture. A strong cold draft from somewhere I couldn't place. Evelina stood before me holding the Taker of Hearts.
I was wondering what had become of this, she said.
Shit. She'd gone through my possessions. I cursed myself for bringing it at all. At the time, it had seemed much safer to keep it with me rather than leaving it unguarded in Sivrnage. Now, it seemed foolish. I tried to move and was rewarded with a stab of pain so sharp it left me breathless. I twisted my neck and drew in a strangled gasp. My hands were tied together in front of me, but those weren't the restraints that kept me immobile. No, those were the nails driven through my wings, which had been stretched out along the brick wall. My blood, bright crimson, ran down the leathery black in streaks that echoed my air-red marks. Cold, unrelenting terror fell over me. I tried to spirit them away, but how did one do that? Rain hadn't told me. Wishing them away, even desperately, did nothing but make my heart race in panic. I drew in a deep breath, trying to calm myself as my eyes continued to adjust to the darkness. Several of Evelina's child companions were scattered about the room, too, standing against the wall or curled up on the broken furniture. I jumped as I caught movement out of the corner of my eye and turned my head to see one of the youngest-looking ones crawling on the ground near my feet, lapping at drips of blood falling from my wings. Get the fuck away from me, I spat, kicking at the girl like a stray cat, and she gave me an appropriate hiss before skittering away.
Don't speak to my children that way.
Evelina moved swiftly, with all of Vincent's smooth grace. She still wore the bloody dress from our fight. She was close enough now that I could see the burns on her hand. When she carried the sword, she did so with a wad of fabric around it, now stained black with her blood. She couldn't wield it either. Her lip curled as she glanced down at it.
I wondered where this had gone, if the usurper had taken it or managed to destroy it. Turns out he just gave it to his wife.
Something glinted in the darkness as she leaned closer to me. The pendant, now dangling around her neck. Her dress was open low, the mottled scar tissue forming a grotesque halo around the moon. Her head cocked, eyes predator sharp.
Can you wield it, cousin?
No one can wield it but him. You know that. Evelina laughed, high and manic. She leapt closer still, her free hand coming to my throat, then sliding down, over the bare skin of my upper chest, where she'd opened up my leathers to reveal my air mark.
I had to see if this was real, she said. Tried to scrub it off you while you were out.
If only it was so fucking easy. Get off of me, I hissed. But she only pressed harder against my chest, making the nails tug at the delicate skin of my wings.
I thought it would be me, she said. I was Vincent's closest living relative. I spent my whole life training to be queen one day. Do you think it's easy? Learning how to rule all by yourself?
She thrust the sword behind her, wildly gesturing to her child soldiers.
I needed subjects to rule. Do you know how hard it was to bring this damn place back from the dead? And I was all alone. All alone.
Her voice cracked. The scent of something burning hit my nostrils. The dim, cold light hit Evelina's chest, revealing that the pendant was burning her too, where it lay against her skin. Every time it swung back against her, she winced.
But then there was you. You, who he kept alive. You, who smell so human.
Her nostrils flared. She leaned closer still, our bodies now nearly flush. Every muscle stiffened. Too close. Too fucking close. Get off of me, I snarled. Nightfire. There was nightfire in this room. I just had to reach for it, call to it. Even if my own refused to come to me, I'd done it before.
Why do you deserve this? You, a human.
And then the next thing I knew, Evelina's mouth was at my throat. Pain as her teeth dug into my skin. A wave of sickening dizziness as her venom hit my veins. I gasped, flailing out against her, my knee coming up to strike her and failing to make contact. Her grip on me was impossibly strong. With every gulp of blood she took from me, my vision blurred. It was Evelina's mouth on my skin. The ministers. My old lovers. Panic set in, artificially dimmed by the venom. I was trapped. Helpless, airmark or no, wings or no. Evelina released me, throwing her head back and licking blood from the side of her mouth.
You taste human, she hissed. You look human, you smell human.
My head lolled. I forced myself back to consciousness through the fog of the venom. Think. I had to think.
And it was you.
She laughed, hoarse and raw. She straightened and the pendant fell against her chest and again she flinched. She froze, going abruptly still. Her eyes gleamed with tears.
I always thought he meant to leave me alive,
she said, barely louder than a whisper.
Always thought it was his plan, that he chose me.
Her hand clutched the pendant, white knuckle tight, blood bubbling between her fingers. Suddenly, I understood. She didn't just flinch because of the pain of the burns, but she had experienced what I did when she touched that thing. Pieces of Vincent, distant shards of his memory. His memory of the night he had tried to kill her, a 5-year-old child, and had failed, not because he intended to, not because he meant to spare her, but because he had killed so many children that night that he was a little sloppy, and she wasn't important enough to risk going back for. And for an odd moment, I understood her so completely that it twisted a knife in my heart. She was obsessed with Vincent. She loved him because he was her only tenuous connection to power, and hated him because of what he had put her through. She survived for centuries by building up fairy tales around him, around Lahore, around a crown she might wear one day. And now, she was realizing that she had meant nothing to him. There was no plan, no secret, no fate. Just a careless, bloodthirsty man and motives that did not make sense. I saw myself in Evelina as clearly as if I was looking into a mirror. Both of us built and broken by the same man. She had prayed for fate and gotten feckless luck. I had hinged my life on luck and gotten secrets. I got power. She got nothing. But at least she could get revenge. You are not like them. Vincent's words echoed in my head. I hated him for them, and yet, in this moment, I latched onto them with ugly certainty. He was right. I wasn't. I was one of the most powerful vampires in the House of Night. in all of Obitrace. I had that power, even if I didn't know how to access it. It was in me. This bitch did not get to be the one to kill me. An idea solidified in this understanding. A risky one. "You're still his blood," I whispered, whether he recognized that or not. She scoffed, but I went on. "I don't want bad blood between us, cousin. You deserved more, and I would give you the sword, if you want it." She hesitated. One of the children, a little girl, stood, interest piqued, her fair gaze spearing me, like she saw what I was doing. "You're owed that much, don't you think?" I said. "For what he did to you?" Evelina's eyes fell to me, then the sword in her hands, and then back to me again. They shone with lust. Evelina was a creature driven wild with starvation, for blood, for power, for love, for validation. The only reason I was alive right now was because she had so gorged herself the night before. But the hint of bloodlust, still visible in her face right now, was due to a much deeper hunger, one that had been following her, I suspected, for 200 years. She didn't even know what she wanted to do with me. Love me? Hate me? Eat me? Fuck me? Kill me? Hell, all of those things, maybe. This seemed like a revelation. I'd spent my entire life fixated on all the ways vampires were different than me. I'd been so certain that all my confusion and frustration was because of my fragile human nature. But Rain was right. Vampires were every bit as fucked up. I didn't even need to be that good of an actress. Evelina was desperate to believe me. "You can't wield it now," I said, "because it's mine. It belongs to the Hiaj heir." I nodded down to my chest and the tattoo pulsing across it. "But," I said, "I could transfer ownership to you."
"I'm not foolish enough to let you hold that blade."
"You don't have to," I said. "Just let me touch it. That's all, and it's yours." She went still, that unnatural vampire still. I could see the calculation behind her eyes. She'd kill me anyway, of course. That was what she was thinking. She wanted it all, the companionship, the air mark, the sword, the crown, my blood. She wasn't willing to give up any of those things after centuries of constant sacrifice.
"Fine," she said.
She brought the sword closer to me, holding it out, while maintaining a strong grip on it over the cloth. "I need my hands," I said. Her mouth thinned. "Still," she nodded to one of her children. The little girl, the one who had been watching me so warily, approached me with a little dagger. Her abrupt slice through the binding cut my wrist, too. Hands free. That was something. Not enough, but something. I gave her a weak smile and gingerly pulled back the cloth wrapped around the blade. The red glow seemed much stronger than usual now, warming my face and reflecting in Evelina's eyes, which were wide and unblinking. I stared at it. My father's blade, supposedly carrying a piece of his heart. Just being this close to it again made me feel as if Vincent was standing just over my shoulder, forever out of sight. "If you are," I thought, "you'd better help me here. You owe me that." "That's a rude way to speak to your father," Vincent replied, and I almost scoffed aloud. I took a deep breath and opened my palms over the blade, just an inch or two from the surface. I closed my eyes and tried to look very, very serious. I was bullshitting so fucking hard. "Use this moment," Vincent commanded in my ear. "This may be an act, but it might be the only time you get to prepare yourself." He had a good point. I used this moment to connect to the forces around me, feeling the room, feeling the night fire. I was probably too weak to generate it myself right now, or at the very least too inconsistent to be certain I could, but I could feel it pulsing in those torches, the energy familiar, if weak and distant. I could work with that. All I needed was a few seconds of distraction. I opened my eyes to meet Evelina's. "It's done," I said. "Try it." She looked wary.
"Are you sure it worked?"
"This is powerful magic. It knew you were blood." Telling her what she desperately wanted to believe, the flare of desire in her eyes showed me she'd bought it. This little girl was still giving me that wary stare, and she tugged on Evelina's skirt, as if in silent protest. Evelina ignored her as she unwrapped the sword. "Take its hilt," I said. "It's ready to accept you." She was definitely going to see through this. How could she not? But hope was a strange, potent drug, and Evelina was at its mercy. She took the hilt and drew the sword. For a moment, nothing happened. The room was utterly silent. A slow smile of glee spread over her lips. She started,
"It's..."
And then, she let out a shriek of pain. The steady glow of the blade flickered in erratic spurts. The scent of burnt flesh filled the room. The sound Evelina was making rose from a moan to a scream, but she wouldn't release the sword. Or maybe the sword refused to release her. Several of the children ran to her side, pulling at her in panic. The rest hugged the walls, watching wide-eyed. "Move," Vincent roared. "Move now." "One chance, one opening." "Fear is the fucking key to it, Aurea," Rain had screamed at me during the half-moon trial. He had been right. The key was all the ugliness, all the weakness I refused to look at. Everything the sword had pulled up in me, everything that had hurt me. I reached deep. Deep into my heart and my past and the memories. My rage, my grief, my confusion, my betrayal. I took all of it. I ripped it all open inside myself. Beneath it all was sheer power. The brightness of the night fire seared my vision. Evelina's screams were so loud, so constant, they faded to a distant din beneath the blood rushing in my ears. Her form was difficult to make out around the fire, but she was stumbling, unable to control herself, still clutching the sword. I leaned forward, ignoring the pain as the nails tugged at my wings and grabbed her. She was half limp. She turned to me, wide-eyed, and in that split second, I saw exactly what she must have looked like as a 5-year-old child, the night that Vincent had driven his blade through her chest. For a moment, she looked at me like I might save her. I didn't. I pried the sword from her hands. The moment my own closed around its hilt, the pain took me. I thought I couldn't feel pain anymore compared to what had been done to my wings. I had been wrong. This was deeper than flesh, deeper than nerves. For a moment, I wasn't here anymore. I was in a dozen different places at once. I was in a ruined tower in Lahore. I was in Sivrinaj, in a coliseum full of screaming spectators, kneeling before a goddess. I was in the Nightborn castle, sitting at my desk. I was in my private training arena in the castle, training with my daughter who needed to be better than this if she was to have any hope of surviving in this world. I was lying in the sands, my daughter holding me, death looming over her shoulder. Stop. But the images kept coming. More than images, sensations. I lost my grip on the world around me. The tide swept me away. Stop, 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 stop. Focus, Aurea. It wasn't Vincent's voice in my head this time. It was my own. You have one chance, right now. Take it. I barely managed to claw myself back to awareness. The sword hurt to hold, but I refused to let it go. I cut through the ropes binding my legs and stumbled forward. Pain flooded me as my full weight pulled against my wings. The night fire had overtaken the room. Several of the children now climbed up the debris on the side of the walls, trying to stay away from the flames. Evelina had pushed herself to her hands and knees, crawling toward me, a sword clutched in her burned-up hands. No time to figure out how to get rid of my wings. I pushed off against the wall and screamed as the delicate flesh ripped free. I flung myself at Evelina, pinning her to the ground. Her sword went sliding across the floor. She reached for me.
Cousin!
I didn't let her speak. I drove Vincent's sword into her chest, right through the scar he had left 200 years ago, straight into her heart. She went slack beneath me, her eyes filling with betrayal before going vacant. My breath was labored. The night fire still clung to the corners of the room. I tried to get up. Someone struck me from behind. I went toppling to the ground. The little girl, the same one who had been staring at me, leaned over me, red dotting her face. She lifted her knife in both hands over her head, ready to bring it down. I tried to counter, A blast rocked the room. My vision blurred, dimmed.